Hello and welcome to The Tips, a betting preview podcast from the DP World Tour. I'm your host, Ollie Silverton, and for this very special episode, we are looking ahead to the best event in the golfing, maybe sporting calendar. Yes, it's the 44th Ryder Cup from the Marco Simone Golf Club in Rome. Before we start, it is important to note that this podcast is aimed at listeners aged 18 and over. All odds were accurate at the time of recording, and the betting information is aimed at a UK audience only. Please remember to gamble responsibly, and for more information, visit begambleaware.org. As it's Ryder Cup week, it felt only right for us to have a Europe v USA style panel. So on the European side, I'm delighted to be joined by one of our regulars. Yes, it's Ben Coley, the deputy head of content at Sporting Life. And making up the other half of Team Europe, it isn't me, despite my accent. I was going to try it, but we've actually got, he's been on before, it's fantastic. We've got Will Gray joining us from GolfBet, who has changed allegiances. We'll get into that very soon. But on the US side, it is myself, Ollie Silverton. I feel a little bit dirty saying that, but I've done it. And I'm joined by Jeff Shackelford, debutant. He is golf author, journalist, writer, pundit, you name it. He's done it. And they're all, you can probably see behind him, and it's fantastic. Man cave of golfing memorabilia and some horses and stuff as well is joining as well for debut. So let's get right into it. And we've got only one place to start is with you, Will Gray, because you have been to the course already this morning, straight off the plane, straight there. What can you tell us about Marco Simone?
Yes, I am bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, Ollie. Glad to be with all three of you. This is my first time to Marco Simone. It's certainly everything that I've read about it beforehand seems to fit. It is absolutely a hilly course, definitely undulating. The element that I think is interesting, and maybe we can chat about this more, is in terms of course setup. In Paris 5 years ago, it was straight and narrow. If you veered off those fairways, you were in a lot of trouble. It was a very overt decision by Thomas Bjorn and company to tighten things up. It worked to their advantage. Now this week, there's the thick rough, but there's a graduated layer of rough where you've got about 5 yards on either side of most of these fairways to miss, and you're going to have a very manageable, potentially flyer, fluffy lie, and you'll be able to get out of it. Now, if you miss more than that, 10 or 15 yards off pace, think Wyndham Clark on the 72nd hole at LACC, that's going to be in the thick stuff. You're going to have some trouble. But I was interested and surprised, frankly, to see that there is kind of that bailout area just off the fairway where you're going to be able to have a short miss and still be okay.
Okay, good to know. Ben, you are someone who's written many previews for the Italian Open. How does that stack up with your knowledge of the course? Because some interesting storylines there. Obviously, previous winners, Adrian Morong just missed out on selection. Then we've got Bob McIntyre who's won here. We've got Nicolai Højgaard. So do you think it will play overly differently, or will you be diving into your old previews to help you out this week?
They'll certainly, I think they certainly give us a clue as to, not necessarily my previews, more what actually happened in the tournaments. They give us a real good clue as to what to expect, because two of the three renewals of the Italian Open played at Marco Simone were won by the very best driver. And if you go back to May this year, I mean, Adrian Morong and Nicolai Højgaard, probably the two best drivers of the regular DP World Tour membership. Well, they were first and fifth. Julien Guerrier, not a player we speak of very often, really good off the tee. Romain Longas, really good off the tee. So it's definitely been the club. And if you think back to when Nicolai beat Tommy Fleetwood here, Morong was second. And then in between, we had Bob McIntyre against Fitzpatrick. It's just a driver's golf course. And that's exacerbated by the setup of some of the scoring holes. So three par fives, but all three of them are really imperative that you hit a good drive. I know it sounds obvious, but there aren't gimme par fives here, okay? You've got to be in the fairway on the middle of them. And on 18 and 9, if you're not in the fairway, it's simply you can't reach the green, even for some of these guys. And the other thing to say is the three drivable par fours, which are all expected to play as such throughout the week. For some of these players, it's only a three wood. And they are where you'll see big swings. You'll see different plans of attack, obviously, in four balls. But I really do think that that's a massive contrast to the Golf National. And I think it's important to get that out of the way early, because that is a game of pragmatism. And this is a game more of power, I think. And some will say that will suit the United States, but obviously, in Ludwig Åberg, Victor Hovland, Rory McIlroy, John Rahm, you've got four of the very best drivers of a golf ball in the sport. So I'm not sure it's necessarily in one side's favor over another. It's just very, very different.
Nice. Yeah, we have been seeing social media light up with course action today. Rory apparently into the wind, hitting it 305 into there with a 3-wood, holding out from the rough. The other thing that's been on there, Jeff, everyone is talking about this US record in Europe. I think if we hear 30 years once again, we know exactly what's coming next. As your teammate, can you tell me why this isn't a concern at all? Or, I mean, why it happens? Why they struggle so much as a mental block? And is it spoken about much in your side of the woods? Because I believe you're currently in LA, is that right?
Oh, is it spoken about much? My God, it's all we talk about. I think they've figured it out. Clearly some chemistry issues over the years and some communications issues, which is always an issue at a Ryder Cup. Both sides have had some captains who weren't the shrewdest at alerting somebody who they'd be playing with or if they'd be going out or benched. And that can lead to unbelievable amounts of strife. I know the outside world probably laughs at that, but when you're a golfer, you need to mentally prepare for a round. And we've had some captains in the more distant past that were not great at that and thought they were running a military unit and the guys were there to kind of obey. And now we've got a little more inclusion and preparation and study of who fits with who. And I think it's pretty clear who's going to be playing together this week already on Tuesday. And for the U.S., that's quite a hurdle. I mean, it just sounds so ridiculous when you think about it. But these are big egos, and it's a complicated thing. It's an individual sport. You bring everybody together as a team. And I think people they devalue the need to treat it a little bit differently. That said, you have another side of this that feels like it's cliquish, and we've started to have a buddy system and guys making the team not necessarily on merit. So there's always that little bit of tension, and whether that leads to some guys pressing, namely Justin Thomas, we'll find out in a few days. But I think they're in a really good place, it sounds like. And I think that for the U.S. is already a major moral victory going over to Europe. And they've actually gone and had a practice session at the golf course, too, which they did not do at France.
I do think it's interesting hearing today from Jordan Spieth, where he's positioning it as the scar tissue has basically been aged out of this U.S. team. You got 12 on the roster, but only four of these guys have ever played a Ryder Cup in Europe. And he said three of the four, myself, Justin Thomas, Brooks Koepka, we all played pretty good. Like, yes, we lost, but we don't have this scar tissue of going 1-3 and getting housed. And we look back at Paris, and certainly Spieth was part of the team at Glen Eagles, but he's like, I played pretty good. I feel good about my performance, even though the team result didn't pan out. Coincidence or not, this is the first U.S. team in Europe without Tiger or Phil since that 93 team, which is the last to win. So it is interesting to see how things will play out from here, but it feels a bit like a changing of the guard, at least at the top, in terms of who's leading that U.S. Team room.
And the idea of home advantage as well. I mean, it's fairly clear that there is something in that. I don't want to be flippant about it and suggest it doesn't exist. But as the years go on, 22 of these guys, I think, have got PGA Tour membership. That number may well be 24 by the end of the year. Nikolai spent spring nearly winning Corrales Punta Cana and playing in Texas and so on. Bob McIntyre spent, obviously, he's in the side because he decided quite shrewdly to stick to the DP World Tour this year, but he has spent a lot of time playing golf in the States. I think we got guys with American accents on our team this year. So I think home advantage does exist, but I don't think it's an excuse. I think if America don't retain the Ryder Cup this week, I don't think really that's sufficient to say, well, look, it's hard to win away. They've got every chance on this golf course, and if they're not comfortable, they will be comfortable in the atmosphere and what have you. These are very experienced. Two of the rookies are major champions this year. One is major when the whole of sort of Northeast England was cheering against him throughout the weekend. So I don't think it'll be an excuse. I don't think it'll be decisive, but it doesn't get away from the fact that we've got two very, what I think, are evenly matched sides.
Okay, nice. You mentioned there, and we've spoken about it, Jeff, from you, sometimes the air of mystery around the US, they're not always that bonding team. That seems to have changed. They've done this recce trip, and most of them were there to check out the course, especially and the important part of the relationships is with the pairings. And we've had some practice rounds today. And as you said, there may not be too much mystery. So as my team US compatriot, I'm also rocking the wrong accent, as Ben mentioned. What did you make of them? Any surprises, and exactly how you think they'll be going out later in the week? And then we'll come to the Europeans, Will Gray and Ben, for their thoughts on the...
Typical golf writer stuff, analyzing the press conference schedule and seeing, Harmon and Koepka as a possibility really struck me as odd. And thankfully, I think we saw today what looks like a much more compatible pairing for Koepka with Wyndham Clark. Not that he can't handle anything that goes on with a round of golf with Brian Harmon, they'd be fine. But it just strikes me as an odd duo for some reason, and no particular statistical reason. The only downside of that is Wyndham Clark played the last two rounds of the U.S. Open with Ricky Fowler, and there's no question that was a huge bonus for him. One, not being paired with Rory, but also just a comfortable pairing. They know each other. And so I still won't be surprised if those two end up as a duo. But everything else seems pretty locked in, pretty wise. I'm very bullish on, I think, what'll be going into this, an overlooked pairing of Homa and Morikawa. I assume that's a lock, the Southern California guys. And, of course, Cantlay and Schauffele's records, stupendous. So I think it's I hope they don't play coy with all this. They always do, and it's kind of silly. But I think they're in a really good place when it comes to potential duos. And again, that's a positive for the United States, because we've had a few of these where we wanted, who's going to play with Patrick Reed? Tiger took him on in Paris and carried him, and it still didn't work out very well. So again, wonderful news for if you're rooting for the United States.
I couldn't agree more. Absolutely, I am. Let's hear from the other side. Will, you can touch on the US pairings, but then get us into Europe.
Yeah, it was interesting today. We heard on the US side from Cantlay, Schauffele, and then also Spieth and Thomas. I think Cantlay, Schauffele is rock solid and a pairing that I would be surprised if they split them up. I do wonder if JT is a bit of a wild card. I'm pretty bullish on Justin Thomas. I think he should have been on the team. I think 12th man discussion centers around Sam Burns, not Justin Thomas. I don't want to derail this entire podcast, but what happens if Justin Thomas goes out and shoots an 81 next to Jordan Spieth? What do you do? Can you wait for them to rekindle their magic? Do you want to really weigh Jordan Spieth down with JT if he's not on form? I think there's a better chance that the Ryder Cup brings out the best in him, but it's clearly a factor that Zach Johnson and the team have to have some contingencies. They have to have a plan B, because you don't want to necessarily send Spieth down with the ship. But I do think, to Jeff's point, that it is nice from a U.S. side to have those pairings. I'm very bullish again on Max Homa. He was undefeated at the President's Cup last year. I think he's going to be great this week. Definitely someone that could overachieve. And then we'll see. It's always interesting to know, from a captain's perspective, do you have these Friday pairings set, or are you willing to potentially adjust at lunchtime based on how things are looking, how players are going?
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, that's US covered off nicely. And Max Homa has been very popular. We're going to get into tips shortly on top point scorers, see who you guys have named. But Ben, the let's call it the real European correspondent, what are we looking at there in terms of pairings?
Well, I think the big question for Europe is whether Ludvig Åberg plays in the very first session. If he does, it'll be with Victor Hovland. And I've gone back and forth. I mean, clearly they're invested in him. I mean, for Luke Donald to say on the Monday of Ryder Cup week about the guy who was an amateur 4 months ago, this is a generational talent. They're not scared of putting pressure on his shoulders. They think he can handle it. We had our first blip in the Åberg road at Wentworth when he led through 54 holes and didn't just not win. He, his chance to win disappeared in the space of about 45 minutes. I don't think that's something we should concern ourselves with too much, but it's interesting to see, or will be interesting to see, whether he gets the nod for that very first session, because there is a very sort of pragmatic, if you like, way of doing this for Europe. They've gone with foursomes first. They could send out their big eight, if you want to call it that, their eight experienced players, and leave the four rookies for the afternoon, where they get to come into the atmosphere of the Ryder Cup, potentially after a good session, but certainly with four balls rather than foursomes. So it's a much easier initiation process. I get the feeling increasingly that they think Åberg can bypass that process. And then it's a question of probably whether Justin Rose or Shane Lowry might be the one to step aside. I would say probably Rose, but then again, what's he won? 7 of his 10 foursomes matches in the Ryder Cup. So he has the pedigree there. They're good options to have. I think that really is the only unknown. I think we see Rahm and Hatton together. I think we see Rory and Tommy most likely together. And then it just depends on what they do with Hovland and Åberg. But no surprise if they're perhaps in the anchor match, maybe on that first session. The other three rookies, I think, will wait for the afternoon.
Yeah, right. The rookie chat's interesting, isn't it? There's been a lot of discussions from both sides. And in Europe, Jeff, there's potentially, it's fair to say, a bit of a theory that the US, maybe not benefited, but having two people picked in Harmon and Clark straight in because of their major wins may not be strengthening their side. What's sort of the coming out of the US on that narrative?
Well, and I'd love to hear Ben and Will's thoughts on this, because I have changed my view a little bit about the U.S. prospects the more I'm seeing of the golf course. And I look at Clark and Harmon as two guys who will love this setup. They're kind of, I don't want to call them plotters, but they have no problem kind of grinding it out on a golf course with a lot of rough and hitting a lot of fairways. And I'm not going to argue with Will on this podcast about Clark's 18th hole drive on the North course in the US Open. It was a great drive. It would have been fairway no matter what, even after, we won't go there, but he's a great driver when he's on. And I think he's going to love the way this golf course is set up. And I'm starting to struggle with Europe's thinking on what they're doing, because I think you're playing into the hands of a lot of guys on the US team more than people realize, who are more than happy to play a pretty tough setup. And I've seen that rough. It's tall fescue grass, which is the same grass that's around the bunkers at LA Country Club. It's a really thick blade and it grows really fast. And I don't see a lot of guys recovering from even where it's trimmed. And so I just look at, Schauffele, Cantlay, even Thomas Koepka, I think, is a guy who likes that kind of grinded out style of golf. Now, it's not a super long golf course, but I'm struggling to understand what Europe's thinking is on this, because I look at some of their guys who are people who, they feed off the driver. And I don't think they're taking driver out of their hands, but if they are, I just really question the it feels like it's a setup for Luke Donald at the moment more than it is for Rory McIlroy and John Rahm. And you want those two feeling good, and you want them to have their mojo with the driver, especially Rahm, because there's a lot of right to left tee shots. He's not a big fan of draw holes. I experienced that firsthand at the U.S. Open this year, listening to him. He really likes the left to right tee shot. And so anyway, that's a long meandering answer to say I'm feeling really good about especially Clark and Harmon. If their games are even remotely sharp, I think this is the kind of place they'll love. And I think they both love the moment more than people realize.
So a lot to dive in on here. We'll have to have a separate podcast about LACC's 18th hole. I think Brian Harmon's going to have a good week. I also disagree with you. I think the Harmon-Koepka pairing has some merit. I wouldn't be surprised to see them kind of together. Very interested to see what Brian Harmon does, hitting it from where Brooks Koepka hits off the tee and so on along those lines. I'm not as sold on Wyndham Clark being able to handle this course, because he is among the more high-variant drivers on the PGA Tour. When he misses by a lot off the tee, and I think that could bite him a little bit this week. In terms of the Europeans, since I am flying the blue and yellow here tonight, I think Luke Donald is taking this approach of, yes, we have 12-man rosters, but I'm really leaning on the 8-versus-8 setup, where he really thinks that he's got a few pairings that are going to work well, and then he says, we'll figure out the rest later. So maybe you don't have to focus on getting Nicolai Højgaard into 3 or 4 matches. Maybe you only play him in 2. Or if Robert McIntyre was on the range today and he was having a lot of trouble with the driver, and so maybe you just let him ride the pine, and in so doing, you're putting Justin Rose out of commission for that first session. So I think a European key to success or path to victory is going to be leaning heavily, and no surprise, on Rory, Rahm, and Hovland, whether they all play 5 or most of them play 4 or 5. I agree with Ben that Hovland is going to be tied to Åberg, and so I think that those two are going to be a popular pairing. So, listen, they've got 3 of the top 4 players in the world. It's no surprise to say, as go those 3, so go Team Europe. But I think that when you look at how much real estate they're going to have and how many innings they're going to eat, for a baseball analogy, it doesn't leave that many other pieces for Luke Donald and company to have to figure out in terms of who's going to play Friday, Saturday.
I think one thing Europe do know that the US may not is that their players arrive here sharp. Something Jeff touched upon, you know. I mean, I think it's a, it could be that Will was talking earlier about, you know, if Foursome's first session it doesn't work out for Europe, the recriminations that might begin on the back of that. I think if the United States don't win this Ryder Cup, the first question I would be asking them is, do you think some of your players should have played some golf in September? I mean, they had some options. You know, the Fortinet Championship is not the biggest event. I know we've got the new FedEx Fall. I know it's not, you know, Max Homa used it as, obviously, he was going for the three in a row. Justin Thomas, four in a row, five in a row, six, I don't know. A lot of Fortinet Championships for Max. Justin Thomas obviously needed to use that tune-up. But the rest of them, they've not played since the Tour Championship. They could have gone to Wentworth. They could have putted on slower greens. They could have played in those cool dew-covered mornings, and they chose not to. And I think, to some extent, that tells you that these guys are confident that they can prepare and be sharp. But Rory McIlroy said he couldn't really imagine coming into a Ryder Cup off 4 weeks off. I just wonder whether that could be a potential point of weakness, or at least a potential question if things do start to unfold for America, which of course is what's going to happen.
Well, one other point on that, why I like the idea of starting out with foursomes. I think it plays into that. It's a format that will expose that rustiness pretty quickly. And the U.S. has only won 3 points in the last two Ryder Cups in Europe in foursomes. It's not their best format. And I think there are a number of factors why Luke Donald's doing it. I agree with Will, it's high risk, but I also think it has the potential for high reward. And if it doesn't succeed, they'll just call in Suzanne Peterson, and she can talk about you know, how they overcame it at the Solheim Cup.
Yeah, that was quite special after 4-0 down to start with the Solheim Friday. There was some inspiration drawn then. And of course, Rory's given us a soundbite. He is the king of them. And he's playing the mind games with the rustiness already. So let's get into our first tip. We're going to look at a few different markets here. We're going to open up with the big one, the correct score. Now, this is, you can tell me why as well. It's a bit of feel to this, isn't there? But Jeff, we'll start with you. And how large are the US going to win come Sunday night?
I think I'm on the record. I'm picking Europe. I know I'm not very patriotic, but I did go 15-13. And I just think it's going to be a lot like other Ryder Cups where the U.S. gets behind in foursomes and they make a great run in singles. I think it's going to be a toss-up at some point on Sunday, but I just feel like Europe's going to feed off the crowd too much and win. So 15-13. Europe.
Okay. See, we're all turning, Ollie, one by one. We're just all going to the truth.
I've been on the record. I have to stick with it.
He's on his rant record. I like it. We defend them the whole time in the podcast, but then just flip it. And that's great. We'll have an injury on Thursday and that'll be fine. So I'm now the sole rider on the US. I'm not sure how this has happened. But that was because I'm taking the 14-all. It just, all of this has been shaping up to be an absolute classic for me. And I think, and we're looking at the Solheim, they're going to do enough to retain it. So technically a tie, and that's 12-1. We'll get a 14-all. But I'm not an expert. Will, you're another American flying with the yellow stars on a blue background. What score are we looking at from you?
Yes, hanging out in Italy. I'm ready to get my EU passport while I'm over here. I went just a touch higher than Jeff. I went 15.5 to 12.5. A decisive victory for Europe, but I think it's tough then to figure out how those final three or four matches might go on Sunday based on once that 14.5 points gets on the board. But yeah, I agree. I think that we're going to know a lot on Friday based on how that initial session goes. It's going to be a very pivotal day, as it always is in the Ryder Cup, but I think more so with how they've switched the formats. But I do think that, you know, Luke Donald's approach of strength on strength of, yes, we have 12, we're 12 deep, but I think my eight are better than your best eight and we can play from there. Could really come to fruition. So I think this is within, you know, a point or two going into Sunday, maybe 9-7 one way or another. But I do think that in the end, that Europe is going to find a way to win at home. It boils down to it's so hard to win on the road. You can go back and have all the reasons for the 30-year drought, but basically the Americans have to have everything go right, and the Euros have a little bit of a margin for error, and I think that's going to make the difference.
I'm very much along similar lines with scores. I thought if you take Europe to win by 1 to 3 points, you'd be in the right sort of ballpark. So that begins at 14.5, 13.5, obviously. I think they have a slight edge, and I do think it's slight. I think we it almost feels like asking for too much, doesn't it, to get a classic Ryder Cup after an all-time great Solheim Cup, you know? But come on, you know, we had a blowout in the Open, so we can have a couple of great tournaments to end the golfing year. Not that it ever ends, but yeah, I'm going Europe. But if you do want someone to tell you America are going to win, friend of the podcast, regular guest Niall Lyons is back in the States. I just want to make clear that someone on this good golf betting planet does think the United States will win the Ryder Cup.
That is good to hear, because we've now got the tie and both teams to win. We are bases covered, and that is great. Thanks, Anar, for jumping in there as the Irishman. Fantastic. So there are some good score lines we've got. Now we're going to look at some individual markets. But before then, we'll play a quick game of Who Am I? I'll just explain this to you now, Jeff. So this is where I pick my star for the week. I give you 5 clues, which get a bit more obscure as we go through. And you jump in every time to try work out who it is. And this is for my top point scorer. So let's quickly get into the game of Who Am I? Okay, so it was tough because there's far less players. I normally get 152 or so to pick between. This could be a very quick game. And if you know the answer, jump in, put your hand up, whatever you like. I think, Will, your debut didn't go badly in this from memory. Much better than Ben's, who struggled early.
Let me stop you there. My debut was the Mauritius Open. I know it's easy to forget about the Mauritius Open when we're here on the eve of the Ryder Cup, but I got Gion Wong Ko after 3 guesses. Oh, the history books don't lie.
That is far better than I can't. I either had 2 or 3 with Tony Finau, but that he has never been to Mauritius, as far as I know. So I give Ben some credit there.
Well, I look forward to when they play each other in the singles in a few years in the Ryder Cup. Obviously, coming from France. Okay, we'll get into it. So the opening clue, tip number one: I have 9 worldwide wins. 9 worldwide wins. Have we got any guesses before we get to clue number 2?
Are we including captains? Luke Donald has 9 worldwide wins.
We are not including captains here.
Sorry.
It's the 24 9. Stars on show.
I've gone Hovland, but I don't think he has enough. Sorry, Will.
Hovland from Ben. Right. Will likes
I'm
to
guess Fleetwood.
Fleetwood. Okay, nice. We can guess. Jeff, you can hold it for a one-time glory if you want to hold for the next clue. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're gonna do that. Okay, perfect. So, clue number 2 is my best ever world ranking is 6th.
Tyrrell Hatton.
Will, I won't reveal till we've got everyone.
Pass.
Good to pass. And Jeff passing as well?
Yeah, passing.
Nice. Okay, this is building well. It is not Tyrrell. I have played in 5 matches in my Ryder Cup career.
Matt Fitzpatrick.
Any guesses from 5 Rome or LA?
Matches?
If it's not Matt Fitzpatrick, this is embarrassing. I've said 3 names now. There are only
probably.
It's
probably should be, because you got to have played in 2. Yeah, it's got to be Fitz, who somehow has not. He's not won a point, right? 0-5 in 5 Ryder Cup matches.
Yeah, I'm going to put Jeff out of his misery. It's Matt Fitzpatrick. Fitzpatrick. Good. Well done, Ben. I'm going to throw another aim out there, but that was said so quickly that I was like, wow, that's very good. Yeah, it was impressive. For clue 4 was I became the first amateur since Bobby Jones to hold low amateur titles at the Open Championship and US Amateur. And then number 5 is, which we thought you may have got, I attended Northwestern University. It was very brief where he went there, throws in a curveball. But yes, Matt Fitzpatrick, for me, he's going to turn the tide this time. He is no points, but I'm feeling good about him after his US Open win last year. But that was my pick. Let's come to you guys now, because you are the experts and I just go off pure feel. And we're looking at the top European point scorer now. So let's go to you guys. The market is got Rory at round 9-2. We've got John Rahm at 5s, Victor Hovland 11-2, and Tommy Fleetwood 13-2. They're top of it. But what do you guys think, Jeff? We'll open up with you, please, on the opposition.
Well, he's my top overall scorer, so I'm giving that away now. But Tommy Fleetwood, I just think he's going to – he's played consistently all year. Sundays haven't been great. I think the setup of the golf course is wonderful for him. I think he's going to feed off the crowds. I really don't think we can underestimate how much the atmosphere is going to play a role in these matches, and we know how much he loves it. I mean, we'll see who he's partnered with, but I have a pretty good feeling, as Ben already mentioned, there's a Rory partnership possible, maybe Sepp Straka. They are playing together today, so I love his chances of having a great week.
Okay, love to hear it, Tommy. The flowing locks, and we know. I mean, if he gets any of the crowd behind him, like he did with old Mollywood back in the day in France, they will go very well indeed. Will and Ben, what about you guys? Who are you backing?
I'm going Victor Hovland. I think that Rory, understandably, top of the market, and Rom shortly behind him. But I think Hovland, having played five matches at Whistling Straits, stands a good chance to play five this week if he gets off to a good start. I do like the potential pairing with Åberg to get things going and just riding that momentum. I know it's been a few weeks since we were all at East Lake, but Hovland finished the PGA Tour season about as well as you can and has carried that over through these last few weeks. So I do think that when you look at the math of, I'm getting decent price relative to what Rory and Rom are putting forth, when I feel like the three of them are on pretty level playing field and equal footing for potentially getting all five matches, and then probably going to have to get 4 points out of those five from there.
Okay, so we've started with 13-2 on Tommy Fleetwood. We've come into 11-2 on Victor Hovland. Ben, are you continuing the trend down one of the big names, or have we got a bit of a surprise for leading European points?
No big surprises here. I'm going with Rory McIlroy. I think I had it between him and Tommy, and kind of in hope that they would at least start together on Friday, which is what I expect they will. I would also add that Europeans generally win the top overall scorer market, so that's something to consider. So personally, Rory at sort of 9-1 overall is preferred to backing him at sort of half that price or less to be the top European. I know Luke Donald has made some noises, just as Zach Johnson has, about potentially not asking anybody to go to the well five times. I think he may have to change his mind if someone does reach the third session having won all three matches, and maybe that man will be Rory. I think, look, I'm a romantic. I do buy into the aftermath of Whistling Straits and his determination to put that right. I think a Ryder Cup legacy is really important to him. He's not old, but he is, in his mid-30s now. So, he'll be 40 when the next Player Ryder Cup, or pushing 40 when the next Player Ryder Cup in Europe. So this is his time to really go out and lead the team in a way he hasn't necessarily done. Obviously, he played a massive part at Medina when he finally made it to the golf course. He won his singles at Glen Eagles in similar fashion, but he hasn't been that guy and won 4 or 5 points for Europe. And I think this could be the year. And I think the advantage he potentially has over a Jon Rahm or even a Victor Hovland is in partners. I think his could be that little bit stronger. So yeah, Rory McIlroy for me to lead Europe to victory.
Okay, good to hear. And there's been some amazing content with Rory. I don't know if you all saw it, but him saying he wasn't basically over that bothered by the Ryder Cup before he started. Now he's really like, it's the greatest thing on earth. And the smile as he walked out of practice today was fantastic. And there's a bit of pressure on him, obviously, to get it done. But yeah, he is leading the charge in the odds as well, around the 9-2 mark. Let's flip it over. US side. Jeff, you think they're going down narrowly. So who's contributing their points this week?
I think Colin Morikawa is going to be the standout for the U.S. He had a good playoffs, not a great year, but the last three starts were really good. The putting, though, if you look at the numbers, the last 20 rounds has been excellent by his standards. I think a good golf course for him, good setup, great partnership with Homa, who won 3.5 points, I think, in the President's Cup. Colin Morikawa is an unbelievable match play golfer. He went 4-0 in the Walker Cup here in Los Angeles, 3-0-1 in the President's Cup, I believe, 3.5 points actually in the last Ryder Cup. So now, yeah, he did have Dustin Johnson as a partner. That helped. But he's phenomenal. He's steady. He's been working at his game, because I follow him on social media. I know he hasn't been loafing around and going to the casinos in his adopted hometown of Las Vegas. So I think he's going to have a big week. And I think he's just fine coming in kind of quietly. And again, I'm assuming a partnership with Homa throughout. And I think that's a great pairing for the both for both of them, but especially for Colin.
I'm going to have to check the tape here. We're about 40 minutes in. I don't know that we've said Scottie Scheffler's name.
Yeah.
And it is amazing to me. He is leading the market for the U.S. top point scorer. He's the top-ranked player on the team. And no one is really buying in on him being the star of the show.
It's all those, I think it's understandable. It's those Phil Kenyon videos that we're seeing. He's just grinding on the putting on Monday is not a good look, Will.
No, it's not. It's not. It's not. And so I think that there it creates some value as he remains at the top of the U.S. point scorer market elsewhere. So I'm going not too far down the board, but I'm going to go with Xander Schauffele. Some places you can find him at a bit of a higher price than Patrick Cantlay, who he's expected to play with several times, if not the whole week. If they could play a singles match together, they might try and do it. So I think you're kind of flipping a coin between Xander and Cantlay in terms of who's going to have a better result on Sunday singles. I will lean a little bit towards Schauffele. It's similar to Ben's reasoning with McIlroy and Fleetwood. They're probably going to be paired, you know, going together through Friday and Saturday. But I do like Schauffele's just overall comportment. I liked his what he said today in the presser. I like his general match play experience, both as a single and teamed with Cantlay. So as a team that I think could really potentially, if not play five, I think that both of them are going to play four matches. I like Xander to, let's say, get three, maybe 3.5 points out of those four.
And I'm going to take the other side of the Morikawa-Homa partnership. I think Max is made for this. And he played the four tonight, and I'm quite big on that. I think, you know, it shows a sharpness. We saw him play really well there. I know it didn't work out for him when he had moved into a good position to win it again, but he's played really well since the middle. He had that really disappointing June, and since then, he's really not done a lot wrong. And I think this will be a really good week for him. The other thing I would say is that, you know, if we do this sort of game out the partnerships, then you have to at least contemplate the idea of Sam Burns at a really big price. If he gets to play with Scheffler in the first session, he gets the same number of points as the favorite, and he's a much, he's one of the outsiders here. Now, obviously, that's based on the likelihood that maybe Scheffler would then move on to a different partner, whereas Burns may only play three, four matches. But it's not always as simple as that. And he did play all five at the President's Cup last year. And the data people will tell you he was actually the best player on the US side. Now, I can't quite get my head around how he didn't win a single match if he was the best player on the side. And he certainly hit some bad shots when he was in commanding positions. But without overcomplicating it, if you're going to be Scottie Scheffler's partner in the very first match, you've got to be considered. So I do think Burns is one to keep an eye on. But no, Max Homa, I think, showed at the President's Cup that he's born for this. And he's got his game in full working order. And I don't know as I can say that with great confidence about every member of this side. So I'll take Max to be the best player in a US defeat.
Okay, I like always ending it with the US defeat or Europe win, which is a beautiful suffix.
You're saying it, Ollie, it comes true. That's
well, exactly right. And I've just realised by accident I've joined the US team and I am wearing a Whistling Straits top. So if that's about omens or what, then I've been hiding it just out of shot. So we've got Max Homa there, 9-1. He is still Colin Morikawa 8-1, and then Xander Schauffele. Well, his record speaks for itself. 13-2. You can get for him. And funny you mentioned that, Will, about Scheffler, because I was thinking, we've not mentioned him. I've barely seen much on social. The one thing I saw today was someone placing a bet, Scheffler 0 points, 100-1. So that's been the one reference so far, which brings me on to a bit of a curveball I'm throwing in here is special bets markets. Ben, your preview's up. You've had a few. But we'll come to you in a minute. But Jeff, is there anything else that you often like to bet on during the Ryder Cup in terms of any of those other specials? Or do you wait for sort of multis and accumulators during the week?
Normally, I would love to get in on something with most points won. But I'm struggling to read into Luke Donald's comments about the hilliness of the golf course and the heat. And I don't know if that was, I don't know if that was a smokescreen or it's actually something to be taken seriously. I mean, it's a hilly golf course, but I've seen worse, like last week in Spain. So that market bothers me a little bit if he does not go all five matches for a Fleetwood or a McIlroy. That's just the only thing I'm kind of suspicious of what he was going for with those comments. Did you guys, I mean, do you believe him? Do you think that's actually something where he might actually bench a Rahm or a Rory or Fleetwood because of the temperature and the hilliness?
I think one.
I think at this point it's all about creating. Sorry, Ben. I think it's all about creating options, yeah. Right? And no one can be believed 100% on Tuesday of press conference. But I think that he wants to give himself an out if he needs it.
I do think Whistling Straits might. I mean, it's a very small sample size, but if you remember, we were all surprised, even though he'd had a bad week, when Rory was dropped for the fourth session, and he came out all guns blazing on Sunday. Whereas Rahm and Hovland, who played all five, failed to win their matches. And Rahm was beaten by a much fresher Scotty Scheffler. And I imagine among the, you know, very, very thick binder of data that Dodo Molinari has poured over, he's probably found some sort of evidence that, you know, four is the optimum number. So it wouldn't surprise me. But as I said earlier, and as Will has just sort of alluded to, it's all very well having that plan. If Rory plays in match one, wins by the 15th hole, he plays in match two, he's won by the 15th hole, and on Saturday morning they win 7-6, it takes a, you've got to be very, very invested in your own plan. If that plan was to drop Rory McIlroy, to go ahead and drop Rory McIlroy, and I think you have to have, in any, look, as anyone will say, and Dodo would say this as well, data is part of the puzzle, and you have to have that flexibility to adjust and change and react to what happens on the course.
Yeah, well, we've seen that over a few editions, someone struggled. Jeff, how hard do you think it is if you have a bad morning to get it back later that day with just the afternoon? Or do you think it's the afternoon off and you play again, you know, the following day? We see it when players in stroke play the whole time go incredibly low, really hard to back it up. But this is totally different mentally. How do you think the players often think about that? And how easy is it just to switch on and off?
Well, it's especially difficult when you do go with foursomes first because you really have to look closely to determine how badly somebody played because they're not hitting every tee shot. They're not hitting every iron shot and every putt. So it's definitely, you know, where we get into some fun moments in the Ryder Cup is watching somebody struggle in the morning and then what happens in the afternoon. And various captains have their plan. They stick to it. Others are not afraid to call an audible. So I think that's another intriguing element of going out first with the foursomes.
Okay, nice. And one thing we haven't touched on too much is like genuine hard hitting, like stats. So we talked about the driving. One that really caught my eye, Will, I'm going to get your thoughts, was the most commonly hit approach shots at the Marcus Simone in two Italian Opens have been from 180 to 220 yards. That's from fairway and tee. Europe has 8 of the top 10 performers at this distance, including all of the top 6. It was shared earlier. I think Clipped Golf wrote that. How much do you think they'll read into that? I mean, we know Eduardo Molinari is playing on the Robert Carlson role of analysis. Do you think that is that part of the reason you've backed them? And do you think they'll really be hammering that home? Or do you think that's sort of background noise at this stage?
No, but I really like to hear it. I think that it's no surprise to see that you know, if you as the home team, if you have a little bit of control over the course, you want to play to your strengths and not only about, you know, fairway width or how high the rough is, but also you want to set these tees based on if I know all of my guys are better than their guys from 180 to 220, I want to create a lot of shots in that range. So we're moving some tees up, we're moving some tees back. So that's all part of the home field advantage. And I listen, for me, especially when you get into the Ryder Cup and match play, it's such a soft science. I think a little bit of data can go a long way. You want to have a reason for making these decisions, but at the end of the day, you got to leave it to the players to be able to perform in the moment.
Yeah, nice. And it was all so planned through, so much so you can get very much think about the previews and bets for hours and hours. And Ben, you've done that. You've written it. You have got a couple of specials to throw out as well. So do you want to name those for us?
Yeah, look, it's one of the really fun things about the Ryder Cup and the markets available is that the bookmakers can't rely on some of the information they have week to week. They don't have the betting exchanges. They don't have a really good system of working out all the probabilities because we don't know who's going to play and in what order and things like that. So essentially, you can use your intuition for once. And, you know, doesn't always work. But one of the angles I've been looking at is who's going to hit the first tee shot. And if I've worked it out correctly, I think in any partnership, the better iron player who may be not the better driver would go on the odd numbered holes. So 1, 3, 5, you know what odd numbers are. Because three of the par threes are odd numbered holes. I also think if you take Rahm and Hatton, for example, if they are playing in a match, when you get to the final three holes, if the match gets that far, 16 is drivable and 18 is reachable in two, but only if you hit the fairway. I would want John Rahm hitting those drives. You know, Tyrrell Hatton's a very fine driver of the ball as well, but I would want John Rahm on those. So my theory was that Tyrrell Hatton, in the scenario where they were the first match off, it would be Hatton who hits the first tee shot. So he made my preview. But going back to a name I mentioned earlier and the sort of proxy thing, over here at the moment, and you know, these things don't always last, you can back Sam Burns at about 28-1 to hit the first tee shot for the USA. Scottie Scheffler is 3-1. So there's a massive chasm in the prices of two players who I think will play together. And if they do play together, it seems perfectly plausible to me that Sam Burns would hit first. And if we go back to the last Ryder Cup, it was Rahman Garcia for Europe and Sergio went first. I'm hoping it's Hatton. I think it'll be Hatton or Tommy. That's my sort of instinct. So there are a couple of interesting things to at least think about. The other I'll give you just briefly is you can bet on the top European rookie. There are four of them. Aberg's the favorite, but I think he's a really good favorite because I simply think he will have the opportunity to score a number of points that the others don't have. I think Bob might play twice, three times max, maybe the same for Nikolai. Aberg could play four. And if he gets off to a winning, I mean, it, without being disrespectful, you could win this market with a point. So Aberg at 6-4, I think is a good bet. So yeah, I'll give you that.
I enjoyed the without being disrespectful. Wow, I don't mean to insult you, but
8 points. Love high it. Bar.
Yes, Will.
I will actually. I had a separate thought, but I did have a point on that. You're a rookie side. I might go the other way. I agree. I would discount Højgaard and McIntyre. So I think you have Sepp Straka there at a higher price. I agree. Aberg deserves to be the favorite, but I feel like if you can get 3-1 on Straka in a 2-horse race, that might be of value. But the one that I'm looking at, not necessarily first tee shot Friday. I'm looking at first tee shot Sunday. I think that similar, Ben, to your idea of how Scheffler could, you know, help Sam Burns kind of leapfrog. If we get good Justin Thomas Friday and Saturday, all of a sudden the idea of him playing first on Sunday has great appeal. He was out first memorably in Paris playing Rory in that match. He's a guy that wears the emotion on his sleeve. It's hard to predict right now which side of things he's going to fall on, but I've seen, you know, 9-1, 10-1 in that range on JT hitting the first tee shot and playing that first match Sunday for the U.S. And I think that that's some great value, because if you get to a situation where he's 2-1 going into Sunday, all of a sudden the chances are much shorter than that in terms of price.
And I'll give you one final one, Ollie, because I think it's really interesting. I think that you can, there's a market on who will hold the winning pot, who will earn the winning half or full point. And I think a lot of people would be as surprised as I was to see that Rory McIlroy's name is at the top of that, and Scottie Scheffler's name and John Rahm's name, because most of the time when we do markets on golfers, the best players are at the top. But Rory McIlroy, if for him to hold the winning putt, Europe might need to lead like 13.5, 2.5 entering the final session, which I don't think any of us think is going to happen. This is usually held by someone who none of us, by a McIntyre, by a Straka, by a Harman, right? So it's guesswork, but Ryan Moore, Jamie Donaldson, you know, these are the names that have held the winning putt or earned the winning point or half point in the past. And it's because it often happens in that bit, sort of the 8-10 region, which is where captains actually, almost counterintuitively, hide some of their weaker players. So big prices on a couple of those is a fun way to give yourself an interest on Sunday.
Okay, well, that's a great tease, because that is the outro to the show, which we are getting to shortly, where we're gonna name them, not as a tip, but we will get your thoughts on them. But Jen, brilliant thoughts overall and fantastic insights and plenty of names put out there. I personally love the Sam Burns opening tee shot, because it means they won't probably see Scottie Scheffler putt on the first hole and, you know, tug a 2-footer and make nerves throughout the weekend on the opening par four. So that makes perfect sense. Yes, so here is a recap on all of those special markets and outrights that we had throughout the podcast. Yes, Yeah, time to quickly recap all of those tips from the guys. And the result overall, Ben Coley says Europe by 1 to 3 points, predicts it's going to be close. And the man to get a lot of those points, Rory McIlroy for the European side and Max Homer to lead the charge for the visiting Americans. Will Gray was in agreement. He had 15.5, 12.5 to Europe, just within that 3-point buffer, with Victor Hovland, the Norwegian, delivering the goods and Xander Schauffele helping out America. And then finally, Jeff Shackford, the debutant, he had 15-13 to Europe, just half a point different to Will. Tommy Fleetwood, carrying on his great form from the last home Ryder Cup for Europe, and then Colin Morikawa for the USA as top point scorer. A huge thank you to this week's guests for all of their insights. Absolutely fantastic stuff and so much knowledge, and great to hear from, well, Americans who are, I think, may actually be looking for European passports as well. But we are coming to the end now. But in true Ryder Cup fashion, we need a bit of a big finish. So as each of you sign off, I want you to say who you predict will get the big moment and sink that winning putt come Sunday in Rome. I'll start us off. It's not a winning putt, it's a retaining putt. And the only man for the job for me, pure irony, full circle, is Scotty Scheffler. Okay, time for the debutant to step up, Jeff Shackelford. Thank you so much for coming on. You can find him at Jeff Shack on Twitter. You're up next. So, you know, start your debut on the tips with a big win. Who is going to hit the winning putt and why?
I think it's going to be Tommy Fleetwood. I don't see him going out early. I feel like he'll be a little bit later on in the lineup for Luke Donald. And I'm on the record. I think it's going to be close. I think the U.S. is going to make their usual singles surge. And it's going to come down to those last three matches. And I think it's going to be Tommy Fleetwood who has the moment and the hair is flowing and Italy goes bonkers. And it's going to be incredible out there. And with the great weather, I just think the atmosphere is going to be off the charts.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much, Jeff, for joining. Fantastic to have you. You heard it here first. Tommy's getting the job done in a few markets for Jeff. Ben, let's come to you now at Ben Coley Golf on Twitter. You've teased it. You've mentioned you love this market. Was there one name that absolutely stood out to you? Who were you tossing between?
Between Straka and Højgaard, I'm going to go for Nikolaj Højgaard. I'm sort of chairman of the fan club. I think he's tough. He's got a massive future. And I remember how he played at the Hero Cup. I think that's probably something that Luke Donald was looking at. He was brilliant there. And I do think he'll be maybe 10, 11 on the list, and it's going to be tight. So Nikolaj Højgaard to bring it home.
There we go. Okay, so we're expecting a very late close finish. Thank you, Ben, for your thoughts. And finally, Will Gray at Will Gray Golf Bet on Twitter. What about you? Who's the name who's finishing off? Another European name.
Yes, we're running out of European names to mention. Interesting, Ben, that you said Højgaard. I almost feel like he's going to be batting too far down in the lineup to win the winning point or to earn the winning point. But so I'm going to go with a veteran presence who I do think is going to fall in potentially that 7-10 sweet spot. I'll go with Shane Lowry. Major champion, someone that is definitely flying under the radar right now, but has the metal to handle this environment and a pivotal singles match. So I think he adds to his resume in addition to that Open Championship and has a Ryder Cup clinching point come Sunday.
Fantastic. There you go. Big Shane to get it done for Europe. Well, gents, thank you so much. That's it. And what a fascinating podcast. I feel like if we recorded this a few months ago, it would have been a lot more red, white, and blue. And it's changed to blue and yellow, which the majority of our listeners will be very happy with. And I'm probably going to get some stick for my selections. But there we go. But thank you very much all for joining. Enjoy the week. It should be absolutely fantastic. Good luck with all of your bets. And we'll be back next week as we preview the Alfred Dunhill Lynx Championship in Scotland and the Sanderson Farms Championship on the PGA Tour. But enjoy it. Sit back. And we'll see you next time on The Tips.